Being from 2 Corinthians, we want you to know, brothers and sisters, about the grace of God that has been granted to the churches of Macedonia. For during a severe ordeal of affliction, their abundant joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. This is the word of the Lord.
All right, I'd like to welcome up our fine panel. We're all going to come up here. And we are in the midst of a season of just appreciating our community. And for me, it's been really fun because I've talked before about how we can become as nuanced and thoughtful and skillful in our encouragement as we are in our criticism. And I think we're building in it. We're doing it, right? We're talking about things we appreciate about our church and our community. And so we've talked about things like our ability to pray and be there for each other and to have conversations that go really deep and that build up spiritual friendship. And so today we're going to talk about justice. We're going to talk about the ways that, as part of the call to follow Jesus, the ways that we step into justice and the ways that we appreciate that. And the reason these people are up here is because they have stepped in to lead us on justice issues in really significant ways. So how many of you can name the three justice foci of our church? Raise your hand if you think you could do it. Okay, see, if you are not raising your hand, that is totally my fault. My failure of communicating like where we're at. So in pre-church prayer, we figured out a little way to help you remember it a little bit better. So we might even improve on this, but we're, you know, a little step by step. All right, so we have three justice foci, partially because, you know, some churches will try, you know, there's so many problems in the world, and some churches try to do all of them, right? They're going to fix the entire world, and it's so broad that it's really hard to have much depth, right? You're a mile wide and an inch deep. Other churches will sort of focus on one thing, which is really good, you know, because then you can all know exactly what's going on. But in some ways, it's hard. Maybe that's not your gifting, your particular area of interest. So at Church Without Walls, we try to choose three foci in order to, like, give some focus, but also give some breadth so that people can at least find at least one thing they feel really called to enter into, right? So here we go. Here are three justice foci. This has been true for more than a year, up to 2 years, actually. Our first one is racial justice. Our second one is environmental justice. And our third one is welcoming newcomers, which means what, Jody?
Refugees, asylees, and immigrants.
There you go. Jody is the one teaching us how to, like, this is what newcomers, we don't mean you've moved to Berkeley for your electrical engineering degree. Unless you've moved to Berkeley for your electrical engineering degree from Eritrea, for example. In any case, we especially want to welcome folks who have been displaced from their home countries, who have come here, often with a lot of trauma. So these three things. Now, what's kind of cool, and we just found this out in pre-church prayer, is if you turn this into an acronym, it actually means, in Chinese, right? Who can pronounce this character for us in Mandarin?
Ren.
Which means?
Person.
Yes. Human. So part of what God has called us to do in the gospel is to embody a new humanity. Like the sense of there's this broken humanity of, like, you know, sin and injustice. I mean, we've created over time these awful systems of injustice. And so part of the good news of the gospel is that Christ has come to break those structures and to invite us as the church to be the new humanity and to live that out. So there you go. Race, environment, welcoming newcomers, all these three things. So because these folks have been leading us in various ways and because they really appreciate ways that we've stepped in justice, and just, I would say it's really important for us to just remember from time to time. And that is why we have even the scripture that we read, if we could put that up again, Paulina, real quick. This is a story. This is Paul speaking to the early church. This is one of my favorite texts. I keep coming back to it because this was like a huge justice focus of Paul's. He was very concerned about the poor in Jerusalem who were literally starving from a famine. So as he traveled around preaching the gospel, he would collect money from them. And so he tells the story of this little community. It's a little poor community, that's what we know, in Macedonia. And he was not even going to ask them for money because they were poor themselves. But what they actually came up to him and said, hey, we hear there's this thing, we want in. And they gave him this donation. And he was like blown away. He's like, you guys are poor. Like, why are you so into this? And it didn't make any sense. And so what he said is this desire to step into justice, even when it's hard, even when you yourself are trying to survive, is grace. And so he's like, I got to tell this story of grace. And so I think we ourselves also have many stories of grace. And in many ways, we are a Macedonia. And so we just want to take some time to encourage you and to sort of point out stories of grace that we've experienced as we as a church really decide to not turn away from some of the hardest injustices in this world as we sort of step in to God's invitation to be new humanity and as we do that sustainably with grace. So Tim, would you kick us off?
Actually, Deb's going to kick us off.
We thought we'd confuse everyone. So I'm Deborah, and I need to stand over here so I can... So I'm going to take you back a little ways. So I started with Church Without Walls when we were meeting in a home about 21 years ago. I left another church that was doing some really good things within a small group of people in their 20s and 30s. But I was looking for a church at that point that was doing something. So a little history for myself. I grew up in the church. I'm a pastor's kid. I grew up in the Central Valley, and the churches that I attended, everyone looked mostly like me. They may have had brown eyes, they may have had dark hair, but otherwise, they looked like me. And that's what I knew of God's church until I came to the Bay Area and moved up here for college. And then I met other Christians. I know this isn't a novel idea for a lot of you, but other Christians who aren't white. And so after I graduated, I wanted to continue in a community that not only embraced that, but was about doing God's work. Because unfortunately, in the churches I grew up in as well, there was a lot of talk, a lot of teaching, but not a lot of doing. And as I read the Bible, as I studied it on my own, I saw that Jesus, and even throughout the Old Testament, God the Father is about caring for his people. Not one kind of people, but all kinds of people. So when we started, one of the things that was attractive is that diversity was a big thing. Diversity and justice for people who aren't the majority. And so that's what drew me. And so we had different ways of trying to figure this out. So we started with tutoring. We had a harvest festival, which is around Halloween. We had movie night to meet our neighbors as people moved into the West Berkeley community. Other people are doing that now. Almost every school has a free harvest festival. The city's doing movie nights. Look, we're trendsetters. But as we've moved away from that, in some ways, I wonder if the vision, like for me, doesn't look exactly like we thought, but we keep going. And that's encouraging to me. So it's changed. If you've been here for a little while, we don't do harvest festival anymore. So you're like, what's harvest festival? It was a free, safe place for kids and all that. During Halloween, but we don't do that anymore. And we've moved from racial reconciliation to what about reparations? We've moved from getting to know our neighborhood is really important, and getting to know our neighbors, to what about the bigger systemic things that are going on? So there are other things that we've moved into there, but I'm encouraged that we are still doing that, that we are still way more diverse than the churches I grew up in.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of echo a lot of what Deb said. I think that the thing that has been, and I'm just going to say it, I think we deserve to pat ourselves on the back. The thing that's been most impressive about Church Without Walls is our continued efforts to press in and mature in how we approach racial justice. Again, when we first started off, we were very personal relationship focused. bunch of people moved into West Berkeley because at that time, West Berkeley was predominantly African-American, low-income African-American and Latino. And so we thought we wanted to move into those neighborhoods, reconcile, have relationships that reconciled racial relations between people of color and people of non-color, white folks. And I think that, you know, we made a lot of great connections in doing that. We made a lot of important, built a lot of important relationships based on that model. But after a while, not only did the area start to change, but I think we started to look at the bigger picture, that while we might be able to build relationships or help folks in a personal way move past the systems and structures that keep them oppressed, what about those systems and structures that keep them oppressed, right? Because we can teach you how to fish, but if the system is drying up the lake, then it doesn't do you any good. So we got to deal with that system. And so we went from doing harvest fests to die-ins, right? So rather than, you know, these say, you know, these kind of community-focused events where we're trying to bring folks together, we said, you know what, that's good, but is that serving the greater purpose of racial justice? Does it make more sense for us to be putting our efforts into events and situations that are going to challenge the structures, that are going to dismantle the systems? And so we matured into acts of protests. You know, we developed relationships with organizations that were actually out there doing the work of dismantling racist systems and structures, working with pastors Mike McBride and his brother Ben on the work that they were doing, working with the Poor People's Campaign, going up to Sacramento and standing outside of the governor's office, chanting and singing and saying, we have problems of racial injustice here in California, and we need you to be listening to that. So I think that in a lot of ways, you know, and the thing is, we're still growing. I look at our church in three phases. There are places where we are woke. There are places where we are waking up. And then there are places that the alarm clock has not even gone off, right? But as a church, we recognize those things, and we have those conversations, and I think one of the most impressive things is that we're having those conversations in-house. Like, we're looking outward, but we're also looking inward and having these conversations about race so that we make sure that we're all talking the same language, that we're all looking, because what we realized after the sermon, the series on race, is that we all agree that racism is bad. We don't all agree on how to attack those systems, how to dismantle those systems and those structures. And so we continue to have those conversations about how can we be most effective in doing that, knowing that we have diverse ideas about what that looks like.
Hi, my name's Wes, and I'm gonna share a little bit along lines of our racial justice efforts too. So I wanted to start by saying this summer, I did a kind of in parallel with some of the things that we've done this last year and then a review that we did this summer, I did a slow reading of Luke, and I really enjoyed that. And I just took little bits every day. And one of the things that I've appreciated about our justice efforts is it's where the gospel comes alive for me in a lot of ways. And I think about all the themes in Luke, and there are lots of them that, like, it could feel like every day I get a little nugget that felt relevant, you know, and, well, the way you find life is you lose your life, and God, Jesus believes in restoration and all these kinds of things. But one aspect recently that I've hit that really stuck out and kind of speaks to me a little bit about how we do justice and what excites me about how we do justice is Jesus' sense of family, you know. And so if family and friends, you know, and if it tends to be in our culture, you know, when we have a big life event, you say, well, I'm glad for all my family and friends who are here to support me, right? How many times have you heard that? Or we welcome all the family and friends, a wedding, a funeral, a graduation, whatever it is. 40th birthday last night. We have this sense of, like, who are family and friends? Who are the community supporting us? And for me, you guys are a lot of that, right? I think when I think about this objectively, gravity is such that often that group is really people like us, right? That we find affinity and, you know, sort of the relational gravity kind of brings people like each other together. Jesus kind of blows that up in the gospel. You know, he really doesn't say, yep, that's the way to go. Find the people like you and support each other and do things for them, right? He kind of blows that up. You know, he says, well, go out on the streets and find some people who are very different from you, who have some needs, and bring them in. Those are the people who are supposed to be in your circle, right? And that's one of the things that's given me a lot of joy about kind of what we've done at CWOW, and in particular in the last few years. I mean, there are different ways that this comes about, but one of the ways I want to talk about is that we've kind of built a relationship with a place called Men of Valor, and it's residential. It's like a residential program for formerly incarcerated men in Oakland, and they're pretty different than us, and their life experience in general has been different. And it's given me joy to see some of those people come into our circle and be part of our friends and family, and I think to begin to see us, you know, showing care, respect, listening, interaction, appreciation for each other, all those kinds of things that you might do when somebody was in your friends and family circle, and to begin to feel like, well, their needs are a little bit our needs. Right, the barriers that are facing are things that are on our hearts now, one of the things that we talked about last week when we were sharing here in the panel, we were talking about sort of the value of community, and it excites me to see the ways, like when we're talking about our community and how our community works, like we were talking about like sharing life in hard times, we're talking about bringing food, we're talking about all the ways that we can support each other. And it's really excited me to see the ways that, like, those turkeys showed up in Men of Valor and somebody burned their backside roofing a recreation area for them. And to be unnamed from the front of the church, but, you know, you can ask me later. Just all the ways that we have expressed care and concern, and I can see, like, that giftedness that we have in community and extending that boundary of our community to bring in some people who, you know, wouldn't show up here on Sunday probably, although we want to get some of them here sometimes, and to lay down our lives in that way, and I feel like the gospel comes alive. And then, if I haven't totally exceeded my time, no? Okay. I will, just one more thing I want to say is, I think in the work that we've done, especially in our life group and other places, I've noticed that there are a couple kinds of people, roughly, when it comes to justice, right? They're like the service people and the advocacy people. And I think everybody needs some of both. In our life group, we definitely have that kind of, like, I naturally go to advocacy because I'm going to fix the system, kind of like Tim said, which is super important. I naturally go to service because I just know how to relate to an individual or whatever. And it's I think they both stretch us. You know, they each side kind of stretches us in a way. And if I think about the 10-second version of some history that affected me in the 80s, we had some policies that were kind of like tough on crime and three strikes, you're out. And those were super popular. And they were popular broadly in America among a lot of different groups of people. And it turned out those policies really sucked. And even though they were widely accepted, even in communities of color and poverty in the beginning, they really didn't work out well for communities of color, and they ended up incarcerating large portions of those communities. And it took me a long time to figure that out because I was relationally distant from that. And I think relationship informs advocacy in that way. And if I think if I had had more of those people in my circle, I would have understood better that we're doing the wrong thing. And, you know, and now, you know, whatever, now we're taking some steps back, and maybe even some Republicans care about that kind of stuff too. And it's good, but I think advocacy really informs, you know, and like the joy of like feeling like carrying someone's needs turns you to, you know, towards giving money towards East Bay Law Center, right? Because you realize that that's a high leverage thing and that helps a lot of people. And so I really enjoy the back and forth between how relationship pulls forward advocacy and how advocacy pushes us and how we do relationship. So thank you.
Okay, guess I'll stand up. So I'm gonna talk a little bit about what I have appreciated with our community responding to the injustices towards refugees, immigrants, and asylees, which we call newcomers. I think one thing that I've been struck with recently is, and appreciating, is this collective desire to learn, to engage, and to act across all these levels of justice. And I'm appreciating that more now because I've been invited is not the word. I feel nudged, maybe pushed by God to start engaging in conversation with people who are not in the Bay Area, who don't already think that we should be welcoming newcomers. I've been entering into Facebook conversations very hesitantly with people who are in the middle of the country who talk about immigration and keeping these illegal criminal aliens out of our country. And it's been really disturbing to me, but it's also been really eye-opening that there are so many white evangelical Christians who do not see this as part of our call as Christians. There was a recent Pew study that asked if we as a country have a responsibility to welcome refugees, and 65% of people who do not identify as religious said yes, 25% of white evangelicals said no, said yes. So that figure really struck me. That's how I think I'm having these conversations with people. And then I thought about us in the Bay Area and us at CWOW and how that's not true. Like, I look around this room and I feel like every single time there's a need in the refugee or immigrant community, I can put it out there and there's an immediate response. Anytime there's a question, people are wanting to learn. So I think the learn, engage, and act, I'm just going to give a few examples of where I've seen that. So learning, recently I was in a small group and was talking about these Facebook conversations I'm having, and the person asked me, Jody, could you give us like a one-page fact sheet on immigration? Because we're having conversations with our family or friends who see immigration really differently, and I don't know how to respond. And so I put something out to Jane, who's an immigration lawyer, and Anne, who's done some pro bono immigration work with unaccompanied minors, and Bora, and we're going to meet tonight to talk about doing an informal immigration panel and coming up with a one-page fact sheet to share here, to share across our church communities. But I think that kind of resembles for me, there is this desire to learn. We know, we see the headlines, it's very complicated, and how do we respond to other people who might really view this very differently? The other thing that I've really appreciated is the engagement. So over this last year, we have had a couple of newcomer dinners at my house in the fall, and then we had some dinners in the spring down in Chinatown, and there are a number of you who have come. Those are mostly to build relationships and to understand where people are coming from. So if you've come to one of those newcomer dinners or World Refugee Day, could you raise your hand? Yeah, there's quite a few of you. And I think what I've also appreciated about that is it's not just, a little bit like Wes was talking about, the relationships, sitting down next to somebody who came from Eritrea or from Afghanistan and hearing their story really sheds a different light on what we read in the headlines. And I've really appreciated the space to share that with people, to invite people, and to, I think, say very visibly with our presence that the church cares about this. So the other thing I've also appreciated, there was one newcomer dinner in February where I think it was a small dinner and the half of us were from CWOW. We had a little sign-in sheet and all of my colleagues at work, I work with refugees and immigrants, they're like, what is CWOW? Who are all these people? And it just gives me a lot of delight and joy to say, yeah, that's my church and we care. And now people are coming to me asking like, oh, your church does a lot. We need someone to babysit next week. Do you know anybody? Or we have a need for furniture. Do you know anybody? So we're also getting a reputation in the East Bay community that this is a church that cares about newcomers. The last thing that I just wanted to say is that we do act, and I've referenced that a little bit, to when there's a concrete need. Many of you have given clothes, you've given money for our emergency fund, you've loaned your van this week, you've given a vacuum cleaner, there's a stroller to someone. So if you have given money or time or donated something, could you also raise your hand? That's like half the church. And I think that what that also says to me is we're really coming alongside people. These are really urgent needs. There are refugees in Oakland who are not having enough food and don't know how they're going to pay their rent next month and trying to figure out how they're going to overcome their health and mental health barriers to try to find a job here when they don't speak English. And I know that many of you know this. Many of you are friends with refugees. Many of you are friends with immigrants. Some of you are immigrants. And what I love about this community is that we don't just sit and listen, that we don't just keep these things to ourselves, but that we're really active and outward and desiring to do more. I hear that from most of you, like, how can I do more? What do we do about separated families? What do we do about these unaccompanied minors? There's just this collective desire, and it's wonderful to be in a bubble where I don't have to try to convince everyone here that this is important. You already get it, and that you're in to do this together. So I'm very grateful for this community.
As Jody mentioned, we look at these three issues and that there are large swaths of our church in America that are sort of known to be on, maybe I could say, and I think I will say right now, maybe the wrong side of these issues from a biblical perspective and God's compassion and justice, that maybe a lot of people would see the church as like not really working against where we maybe should be at. And as Jody said, that's not you all, but I think when we look at these issues, the tendency for us, and for me certainly, the very strong temptation is to just like look away, basically just to change the channel, or to get depressed and to just like give up. You know what I mean? It's just, these things can be so overwhelming, and it's like that daily drumbeat of more bad news or more. And just hearing that, you know what I mean? Can't you just feel it, sort of? It's very easy for those of us who, for these issues don't affect us directly, which I think all of these issues affect us in some way, but all of us also have the privilege of being able to check out of these issues. And it's the common thing to do for people who are privileged and not forced into dealing with issues like this. And I feel like that's even more so about the climate crisis. Like, of all the different ways that, like, Jody and I have, like, been involved in justice over the years or that kind of we have, only recently have I come to realize, like, oh, my gosh, we're destroying the planet. And, you know, even a couple years ago when I was a seminary professor, my job title was Professor of Justice and Mission. I was supposed to lead the church in this. And I barely could find time in my curricula, which I got to design, for environmental issues. It was, like, always the last thing out. And I think it's partly because, like, there's two reasons, really. Like, the big impacts of the climate crisis are far away, right? It's easy to be like, it's a nice day today here in Berkeley, right? It doesn't feel like the world's burning up. And it takes an extra act of mental faith to just remember, like, what the truth is, you know? And the other thing is, with this justice issue, like, we are the enemy. Like, we are the ones putting the carbon up into the air, even to get to church. Like, I drove to church today. It's very hard to build a movement against yourself. You know what I mean? So it's very easy to just say, you know what, I'm not going to think about this. I'm going to move on. I'm going to deprioritize it somehow. I just want to recognize that that's the tendency. But the reason I'm so encouraged by you all, and I think we've all said this in some ways, is that you are a church whose heart is in the right place. And when you hear these hard things, there's something about this church that engages with it. You know, and in a place in which it's easy, the great tendency is to actually disengage because of the emotional and spiritual cost of engaging. There's just some grace that we have, almost like those Macedonians. There's this grace that we have of just engaging. And it's powerful because I've been around lots of different churches and lots of different places. And most of the time when we talk about any of these three issues, you just feel this sense of people taking offense, getting uncomfortable, not wanting to engage, making a little joke to kind of redirect the, you know, all of those things. But when I'm here and we talk about these things, I just feel people like something in you rises up. So you're a good-hearted church. And I want to say that to you because it's rare and it's a great blessing. And I'm really encouraged by that, the way that you rise up. And I also want to say that because you also have a tendency to criticize yourselves. And yes, we're not doing enough in any of these things. But the problem is we often just go with the kind of criticism. And some churches, if you just said, hey, you're doing great, then you'd sort of like become complacent. You're like, oh, we're doing fine. Let's go out to eat, whatever, you know. But I feel like for us, we actually can use the encouragement that there are ways in which we're a good-hearted people, that we have hearts of grace, that we want to step into these things, and that God is at work. And it's important to remember that. You know, we often even just give our money. The passage about the Macedonians, that's about giving money to do justice in a sacrificial way. And we do that, and we often forget like the impact of that. So just really quickly, Jody, could you tell us a little bit of the impact right now of money that we gave to your agency and what's happening with that like this very week as you go to work?
So there was about $2,000 that was given in one Sunday. We as a team decided that we would spend a third of it on emergency bus passes. A third would be on emergency food cards, and then a third would just be a floating fund for whatever emergencies that we can't predict come up. Just yesterday, I was telling one of our case managers to go get some of those food cards. She's working with an Eritrean who crossed the border. The Eritreans are now going from Eritrea to Brazil, crossing on foot to Mexico, getting detained. And if they get their asylum approved, they come to Oakland because they know that's where all the Eritreans are. And she's 22, has a foot injury, barely making it, can't get a job, and is supported by a resettlement agency, and they're struggling too. So I was just asked, like, how can we get her food? How can we get her a bus pass? And I said, please take what you need from those remaining food cards. We can get more. This happened 3 weeks ago as well. So we're still seeing a lot of mostly asylum seekers, and the asylum seekers really don't have much support from anybody, and they come to us because we're kind of their only safety net. So it's being used all the time. I might ask for more.
But I mean, like, how many of you even remember that just recently we gave all that money? Like, you forget, right? Like, Jody mentioned that. You're like, oh, this is still actually happening. I'm like, oh yeah, we just did that. And it's working, right? So I just want to encourage you that the good-heartedness that you've shown, that your willingness, even in your own struggle to survive in the hard times of your life, your willingness to not just turn away when we hear about the hard injustices, but to respond to God's heart to make things right, like that's a beautiful thing. And that's a story of grace that we as a community are actively telling. And we're in the midst of telling that story of grace. And I really fully believe that, like, if a sort of New Testament letter were being written, just the way it was, you know, Paul's telling the story of grace about the Macedonians, that people would be able to tell a story of grace about our little church as well. And that is part of embodying the gospel as we move forward. So I just want to say thank you and be encouraged and keep responding with that same good heart. as we face kind of the really hard things. As we close, I also want to invite you, as we do every week, to consider just getting prayed for and supported around these sort of areas, because it is true that, like, we were really in pre-church prayer today. We prayed for those of us who in our jobs or in our lives are really prioritizing facing these issues, like we're on the front lines, whatever it is, and that can be depleting, and that we can become motivated by, like, fear. You know, you hear these things, and it's not being motivated by grace, but it just seems so overwhelming, and we have to fix it. That's why we just need, like, we not only need to do advocacy and relationship building and how those are synergistic, but our own spiritual lives. Like, that's the only way for us to really be advocates, to be justice people that God is using for justice, if we come to God and say, God, fill me up again. Replace my fear with hope. Give me grace in those places where it's just so overwhelming to think about this. So we'd love to do that for you this morning. Like, if you're feeling that way about anything that you're struggling with, justice issue, come and get support from the community. And the other thing we want to do right now is sing songs of worship. Because those of you who know the history of Christian justice movements, whether it's, you know, civil rights or whatever it is, you know that everybody sings. It's one thing across all cultures, like justice movements that are sustainable, like everybody sings. Everybody's got their chants and their songs. Because it brings together our spiritual life and our praise of God with the God who is for justice. So let us continue in worship together as part of our practice of justice this morning.